Good morning. I'm Janet Seaworth. I'm the administrative law judge that's been designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings to preside this morning. And it's about 9:06 a.m. on April 27th, 2016. And this is the time and place scheduled at the PSC hearing room in the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the administrative hearing in the matter of the application filed by Otter Tail Power Company for approval of its 2016 renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor for recovering costs associated with its owned electric generation wind farms effective April 1st, 2016. This is case PU 1614. I'd like the parties to state their appearances for the record, beginning with the applicant and then followed by PSC counsel. Would you please state your appearance for the record?
Bruce Gerhardson, Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power Company.
Stuart Tomerdahl, Manager of Regulatory Administration for Otter Tail Power Company.
Thank you. Mr. Gerhardson, is there anybody else here that you'd like to introduce for the commission?
Thank you, Your Honor. We have several members of our staff here. None of them are appearing as witnesses or participating in the hearing, unless there is a need for any purpose. But we have Mr. Tom Brouse, our Vice President of Administration. We have Gina Ice, our rates analyst with us. Tino Harris, also a rates analyst with us. And we have Corey Borman, our Supervisor of Income Tax and Payables. Again, they're not participating in the hearing unless there's specific need. But at the same time, I thought it would be worthwhile mentioning that they're here.
Thank you. And PSC staff.
John Hsu, on behalf of advocacy staff, along with me today is the Director of Economic Regulation, Michael Diller.
Thank you. I understand there are no interveners in this action. Is that correct, Mr. Hsu?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there anyone present from the public? I don't think I see anybody, but I always make sure that we provide an opportunity for the public to participate if they are here. I'll again ask before the end of the hearing in case someone shows up. If there's someone from the public that would like to make comments, we will do that later in the hearing. Towards the end. I'd like to introduce the commissioners at this time. I'm sure most of you know who they are. To my immediate left is Commissioner Randy Christman, and then our chair, Commissioner Julie Fedorchek, and Commissioner Brian Cock. After a brief summary of the application, then I'll certainly call on the commissioners for any opening comments. Beginning with the chair, Fedorchek. The notice of hearing summarizes the application. And the notice of hearing is dated March 23rd, 2016. On December 31st, 2015, Otter Tail Power Company filed a request for approval of its 2016 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor for recovering costs associated with its owned electric generation wind farms effective April 1st, 2016. The proposed change would increase the average monthly cost of service by about $1.08 for customers using 1,000 kilowatt hours. I hope I said that correctly. Thank you. On January 20th, 2016, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. And then on February 26, 2016, Otter Tail filed an updated cost information for its wind farms. And the updated renewable rider would increase the average monthly cost of service by 2.985% or $3.03 for customers using 1,000 kilowatt hours. And this is the hearing that has been set for the approval of that application. And the hearing procedure that we'll use today is as follows. First, Otter Tail Power will have an opportunity to present its case for granting that application. Otter Tail may call witnesses, and of course any witness called by Otter Tail would be subject to questioning by PSC advocacy staff. And I understand, Mr. Gerritsen, that you have no objection to advocacy staff asking questions. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you. And thereafter, then the commissioners will have an opportunity to ask your witness questions as well. And then upon completion of your presentation of your case, PSC advocacy staff will have an opportunity also to call witnesses. They will also be subject by you and by the commissioners as well. Have I missed anything as far as witnesses, Mr. Hsu?
Just briefly, I believe we had some correspondence in today for advisory staff. Jerry Lean is appearing, and they were along Jeff Code Sacco. She did send some correspondence around requesting that he be able to ask questions in this hearing as well.
And Mr. Gerritsen, you're okay with that?
I am, Your Honor.
Thank you. As you know, no decision will be reached today. The proceedings are being recorded, and then the evidence will be reviewed by the commissioners. Thereafter, the commissioners will issue findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order as to whether the application should be issued, granted, denied, or ordering any other administrative action. And then, of course, any party not agreeing with the decision of the PSC may appeal. They may have appeal rights under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 2832, which is the Administrative Agencies Practice Act. Are there any questions regarding the procedures so far, Mr. Gerritsen?
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Hsu?
Nothing.
All right. We did discuss exhibits a little bit this morning before the hearing began, and we did mark the exhibits. The applicant, Mr. Gerhardsen, I understand you have exhibits that you wish to offer this morning.
I do, Your Honor. And actually, if I might also say that Mr. Hsu and I have spoken, and we are in general agreement that all of the exhibits might be admitted by stipulation of the parties. The exhibits that we've marked is the initial application that was filed in December of 2015. That's marked as OTP1. The supplementary application that was filed in February, I should say supplemental application that was filed in February of 2016, that's marked as OTP2. And then the pre-filed written direct testimony of Stuart Tomerdahl is marked as OTP3. We could either offer those at this time accordance with the stipulation, or however you'd like us to proceed, Your Honor.
Yes, I think that's fine. You offer those for admission. And Mr. Hsu, you agree that the PSC staff has stipulated to their admission. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
For the record, then, OTP 1, 2, and 3 are admitted. Any other exhibits, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
Thank you. And Mr. Hsu?
Your Honor, we just have one exhibit, the pre-file testimony of Michael Diller.
And we have marked that as PSC 1, is that correct?
That's correct.
And Mr. Gerritsen, you agree that the admission has been stipulated to by Otter Tail?
I do.
Thank you. Then PSC 1 is also admitted. Any other exhibits, Mr. Hsu?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. We always allow an opportunity for opening statements, but I think first I'd like to give the commissioners an opportunity to make some brief statements before we begin. So, Commissioner Fedorchuk, may I start with you?
Yes,
for the opening?
That would be fine.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thanks for the very thorough pre-filed testimony that you all provided. That was really helpful, kind of getting through the details of some of the more technical language and descriptions provided in the application. So I really did appreciate that. And while after having gone through all this, it seems pretty straightforward. This is our first hearing since I've been on the commission, first formal hearing with Otter Tail. And so it's kind of just fun from that standpoint to see how you guys present things and explain things, and I'm impressed. It was very good explanation and thorough, and in, you know, like accounting for dummies, really, which I appreciate that. And I really also appreciated having a better understanding and explanation of the how the production tax credits flow through, how you account for them, how they're managed over time if you can't use them, just the whole bonus depreciation and all these things that we hear about but really don't dig into all that much and haven't yet. So I appreciate that. And also getting a good historical perspective of these wind farms and their capacity and how much energy they're providing and at what cost. So all of that has been really was really helpful, and I appreciate having this more formal opportunity to dig into this and to discuss this, this particular issue. I don't have any real heartburn over it. I think it's pretty self-explanatory and straightforward and makes sense, but I do look forward to a good conversation today. So thank you.
Commissioner Cock.
Thank you, Your Honor. The I guess where do I start at? The good thing of the longer you're in the commission, then you kind of understand things a little bit longer, but then also you bring your biases from previous cases to future cases, even though you're supposed to leave those behind. The and so I'll just throw my cards out there early. The I remember one of the first proceedings I was involved in early January of 2009 was probably dealing with the 2008 rider for this. And I remember asking the discussion, I said, okay, now tell me how this is going to play out. And it was maybe a couple different cast of characters out there, but a lot of the same people. And, well, we've got these three wind farms. We're going to add them in. Eventually the costs will stabilize. And I said, so, okay, wait a minute. Now, when all these are in there, we're going to get a stabilized cost, so I'm not going to be coming back in with $1, $2, $3, $4, $10 increases every year. And he said, oh, no, no, this will stabilize. So now here we are today, 8 years later, and we've gone from you filed a $1 increase, and then you – went back and double-checked numbers or something changed, but maybe you should have caught that before it changed. I mean, I find it hard to believe that something was $1, and then 2 months later you came back, you had to ask for $3. I don't think there was a policy change in that time, maybe policy implementation, but you should have known that because we put out two different notices, that catches people's attention. And we go, so now we're asking for a $3 increase, and I understand what Commissioner Fedorchuk said, it's explained. But it's still a $3 increase for a wind rider that a rider was supposed to be put into place to stabilize a cost, to truly reflect the decrease in cost over time, because it should become a better deal the longer these are in production. So that's some of the discord I've got going up here, that I understand what's been filed today, but it's not gelling with what we've talked about in the past. And so if I was somebody like the large industrial group, I would be watching this very closely, because of one of our rate cases, they intervened for something that was less than this per month. So I'm just surprised that none of your customers are throwing a fit about a $3 increase. So it's a big increase. We have rate cases that we have hearings around the state for smaller than this. We're together in a case in front of FERC right now that has less implications in dollars than this does. And so that's some of this that I really want a full record. I want good questions back and forth, but I really want to your viewpoints about whether these riders are the right way of doing business, because if these tax codes are skewing business, I shouldn't say, well, maybe skewing, I'm getting it out there early, but if there's the implications of tax, maybe the riders aren't the best way to do this. But we need to figure out what is the best way for you to manage your business to keep the costs down. But it will send the wrong message if we approve a $3 increase for wind without having a very good reasoning why and showing that there's a decrease somewhere else that maybe is offsetting it. But so that's kind of, for me, some of the backdrop of it. And I think last year we had a decrease in this. I know there was probably some over-earnings at one point that caused for the decrease. But, you know, talk about schizophrenic policy. One year we do a decrease, the next year we do a $3 increase. And so that's some of the, you know, being able to manage what's going on there. I do want to develop a full record on this case, because whatever decision we make, you know, it'll be subject to appeal. There's a lot of people, whether you guys are watching this or not, a lot of people are watching this case very closely to see what happens. And so I think that's kind of the setup. I mean, I get the filings and all that, but that's the backdrop. I want to make sure we answer those questions. And then going forward, what is the right thing to do with these wind farms? And make sure we're truly capturing the right costs in the right places. So like I said, we don't have these policy shifts of up and down where this year we raise it $3, let's say, and next year you come back in and say because of tax implications, now you have to lower it. $0.50 a month, because that's the way I read some of this, that the tax things, you may get a benefit down the road. Well, maybe there's a way we can do some deferred accounting, for lack of a better term, on these costs this year and carry those over till next year. And then so next year we're not coming back with a decrease in something. So these are all things that are stirring around up here. Maybe you can guide me back down the right road as we get through the testimony. But that kind of lays out, I think, all the questions that I had. And I thought it was appropriate to have a hearing because those are more than an informal kind of questions, and that's certainly something that I want a full record on whenever we make the decision on it. So thank you guys for enduring.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman?
Well, Your Honor, most all of my opening thoughts have already been articulated, so I won't take time to be repetitive here. But I will say, of course, we wouldn't have been talking about any cases, but the three of us were talking a little bit earlier this morning about how blessed we are, and I think this is one of the rare times when I would venture out and speak on behalf of my fellow commissioners about how blessed we are to have the administrative staff that we have here and really keep this place going, and it'd be an administrative assistance day. I just want to very publicly acknowledge the team that we have here and thank them for their efforts.
Thank you, Commissioner. We always provide an opportunity for brief opening statements. Would the applicant like to do that?
I would, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may certainly go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, Chair Fedorchik and Commissioners. I'm going to make a brief opening statement. It's mostly procedural in nature. We're here for Otter Tail's 2016 annual update to its renewable rider rate. The rider is a cost recovery mechanism. And it is allowing us to recover the cost for three major wind farms, the Langdon, Ashtabula, and Laverne wind farms. All of those are constructed here in North Dakota between the years 2007 and 2009. We have made annual updates. I actually don't recall how many, but they've generally been routine, generally involved a declining rate, as Commissioner Kalk mentioned, due to depreciation. There has been variation from year to year. This year we filed an update on December 31st, 2015. At that time we were aware, we had a commitment to make the filing by that date. We were aware that on December 18th there had been an extension of bonus depreciation for federal income tax. And we knew that that would have an impact, so we had, at the time of the initial filing, made a commitment to make a supplementary filing once we had done essentially the analysis of the impact of that extension of bonus depreciation. And then we made that supplementary filing on February 26th of 2016. We showed in that supplementary filing that there was an impact to tax expense and deferred tax calculations. They're complex. Beyond a doubt, they may be some of the more complex things that a person that works in rate making will ever really have to deal with. And there was also an interrelationship between how those beneficial tax, the extension of bonus tax depreciation, interrelated with the other riders that we have. I think because of the concerns that Commissioner Kalk expressed of this complexity and what these interrelationships were, this formal hearing was scheduled to provide a record on the issue. Since that was scheduled, we have been providing information to Mr. Diller and advocacy staff, and we pre-filed some written direct testimony from Mr. Tomerdahl. Mr. Diller also pre-filed some written direct testimony. And at this point, it doesn't appear that there's any controversy on the issue. So it appears that it's a complex issue, but not a controversial issue. Mr. Diller, in his testimony, affirmed our tax calculations. And also in both his testimony and Mr. Tomerdahl's testimony, they described an update to some other matters within the riders, the jurisdictional allocators, and a return on equity that the parties both agreed to. For this hearing, we want to create a complete record, and I may actually ask for some direction on this. It was our intention to really just enter without repeating the pre-filed written testimony, and then have, from our end, Mr. Tomerdahl summarize the testimony and then offer him up for questions both to staff and to commissioners. If the commission would like us to do more with the pre-filed written testimony, we certainly can do that, but I also don't want to waste anyone's time. I know that's available to you and has been. So I think with that, maybe I'll close my opening. I don't usually ask decision makers what they like in these settings, but I think in this case I maybe would. It is a very complex issue, and I do want the commissioners to get whatever is useful to them in terms of a record.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark, do you have a preference as to whether you would like to have the pre-filed written testimony essentially read into the record? And then, of course, the witness would be available for questions, or would you like to dispense with that? What are your thoughts?
Well, my personal thoughts are I always like when the witness comes up and gives a general summary and then we ask questions, but I'm open to whatever my colleagues want. The big question that I'm trying to get to is I'd like some discussion about alternatives, because if I say no, okay, then what? I mean, I would like to hear your alternatives. And so is there a way we can figure out a different way to account for this as we go into the next couple of years? Because I get it, but I don't like this the way this is played out. So that's what I'm trying to get out of this discussion today.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Yeah. I think that works, and Commissioner Kalk can ask those questions of the witness after he gives his summary and get to the bottom of what you want.
Okay.
Agreed.
Okay, very good. Then that's how we'll proceed. Mr. Hsu, does the advocacy staff have an opening statement they'd like to make?
I believe that was a fair introduction in the case here, and I think we're set to go straight into the witness.
Okay, very good. Then, Ottertail, you may call your first witness.
I'll call Mr. Stuart Tomerdahl.
Thank you. Mr. Tomerdahl, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you on the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you.
May I approach to
yes.
three primary exhibits that we have there? OTP 1, 2, and 3.
I think those are it.
May I approach the witness?
You certainly may.
Mr. Tomerdahl, even these three exhibits have been entered into the record, but I thought that I would ask you just to...
Bruce, you probably should turn on your mic there. There you go.
Thank you so much. I have a technical question, too. I know that Mr. Hsu leaves his mic on. Should I be leaving it on, or should I be shutting it off if I'm not speaking? Does it create audio?
You can leave it on.
You can leave it on. It doesn't create any feedback that I'm aware of.
Thank you. I'll leave it on. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to have you identify these three exhibits. Can you identify exhibit number OTP1?
Exhibit number OTP1 is the initial filing that Ottertail made on December 31st, 2015 in this case.
Can you identify exhibit OTP2?
Exhibit OTP2 is the supplemental filing that we made in this case on February 26th, 2016.
Can you identify OTP3?
Exhibit OTP3 is the pre-filed testimony of mine, which we submitted last Friday.
Mr. Tomerdahl, with respect to the information contained in the initial application, the supplemental application, and your pre-filed written direct testimony, exhibits OTP 1, 2, and 3, can you verify the contents of those as being accurate and truthful to your knowledge?
My knowledge, yes.
With respect to your pre-filed written direct testimony, if I were to ask you those questions here under oath, Today, would your answers be the same as they are portrayed in the pre-filed written testimony?
Yes.
Mr. Tomerdahl, have you prepared a summary of your written testimony?
I do have an opening statement summary of my testimony.
Would you give that now?
Thank you. On December 31st, 2015, Otter Tail Power Company filed its annual rate update to the North Dakota Renewable Resource Adjustment Rider. The Renewable Rider recovers North Dakota's share of Otter Tail's investments in the Langdon, Ashtabula, and Laverne wind projects, three high-performing wind-generating facilities located in North Dakota. In the initial filing, Otter Tail included actual revenues, costs, and collections through October of 2015, and current forecasted information from the November 2015 to March of 2017, the end of the proposed collection period. The rate proposed in the initial filing was 5.32% of base rates, an increase from the current 4.069% of bill rate currently in effect. The total revenue requirement for the recovery period beginning April 1st, 2016 was just over $7 million. In the initial filing, Otter Tail acknowledged that federal legislation had been passed on December 18th of 2015, authorizing the use of bonus tax depreciation beginning with the 2015 tax year. We noted that that Otter Tail had not completed an assessment of the impact of this legislation at the time the initial filing was submitted. We also noted that once that assessment was complete, if utilization of bonus tax depreciation for 2015 resulted in a material impact to the revenue requirement in this rider, that Otter Tail would make a supplemental filing in this case. On February 26, 2016, Otter Tail did make a supplemental filing to incorporate into the renewable rider the impact of Otter Tail's ability to utilize bonus depreciation for 2015. That supplemental filing reflected a new revenue requirement of $9.26 million and a proposed rate of 7.573% of base rates. Otter Tail proposed a new effective date of May 1, 2016, with a recovery period still ending March 31st of 2017. Otter Tail explained that the increase in the renewable rider revenue requirement was driven primarily by a change in Otter Tail's ability to utilize production tax credits, or PTCs, on its tax returns for both 2015 and 2016, for 2015, and the corresponding impacts to the deferred tax asset balances attributable to PTCs for both 2015 and 16, which are included as part of rate base in the renewable rider. Otter Tail had significant capital projects placed into service in 2015 that qualified for bonus depreciation, including the Big Stone AQCS project, certain transmission projects, and other company-wide capital projects. Because of the significant amount of bonus depreciation that Otter Tail will be able to take for 2015, Otter Tail will report a tax net operating loss, or NOL, for its 2015 tax year. With no taxable income upon which to apply production tax credits, Otter Tail's balance of unused PTCs increased for 2015 and 2016, as opposed to those balances decreasing, as originally projected in the initial filing. Table 9 on page 11 of my pre-filed testimony illustrates these changes. I do want to reiterate that while the timing of when PTCs ultimately get used on OTP's tax returns can vary, the actual PTCs generated each year continue to pass through dollar for dollar to ratepayers in the form of a reduction to the tax expense portion of the renewable rider revenue requirement calculation. While the projected revenue requirements for both 2015 and 2016 have increased in the renewable rider, Otter Tail's current projections show that reductions in the revenue requirements for Otter Tail's environmental cost recovery rider, or ECR, and the Transmission Cost Recovery Rider, or TCR, will more than offset the increase in the revenue requirements in the renewable rider. The utilization of bonus depreciation for investments being recovered in the ECR and TCR will significantly increase the amount of accumulated deferred income taxes, or ADIT, within those riders. The treatment of ADIT amounts in riders is consistent with traditional rate-making principles, where the ADIT balances are included as an offset or credit to rate base. Lowering the rate base balance upon which revenue requirements are calculated. In my pre-filed testimony, I provide Table 10 on page 21, which shows the magnitude of the increase in the projected ADIT balances in the ECR and TCR riders for 2015 and 2016. Otter Tail recently filed its annual update to the North Dakota ECR rider. That filing was submitted on March 31, 2016, case number PU-16-148. In that filing, Otter Tail incorporated the impact of bonus depreciation from the Big Stone AQCS project, which was placed in service in late December of 2015. As a result, OTP is proposing a reduction in the annual revenue requirement of the ECR by approximately $1.9 million. And a reduction in the rate from the current 9.193% of base rates to 7.904%. In the ECR filing, Otter Tail provided a table comparing the impact of bonus depreciation on all three of Otter Tail's riders for calendar years 2015 and 2016. I have included this table as Table 11 on page 21 of my pre-filed testimony. Mr. Diller also includes the same table on page 7 of his pre-filed testimony. Otter Tail projects the overall impact of bonus depreciation across all three riders is a reduction in revenue requirements of approximately $435,000 over calendar years 2015 and 2016. As I noted earlier, the current renewable rider rate in effect today is 4.069%. That rate went into effect April 1st, 2015, and included a significant negative true-up amount of approximately $1.8 million for prior periods. In my pre-filed testimony on page 8, I provide table 8, which shows the revenue requirements applicable to the rates implemented April 1, 2014, April 1 of last year, and the proposed revenue requirements for both the initial and supplemental filings in this case. I also explain the drivers which led to the large negative true-up, which was driven in large part by the higher utilization of PTCs going back to the 2013 tax year. Higher sales due to the cold weather and the inclusion of proceeds from the sale of renewable energy credits also contributed to the large true-up amount. In summary, last year's true-up was abnormally high, setting a somewhat artificially low rate that is currently in effect today. During this case, staff inquired about Otter Tail's 2015 earnings. Otter Tail recently completed its 2015 cost of service study, and we shared with staff that Otter Tail's actual North Dakota earnings showed a 10.94% ROE for 2015, slightly higher than Otter Tail's allowed ROE of 10.75%. This equates to approximately $558,000 of revenues for 2015. Otter Tail also shared that in 2015, Otter Tail's E2 jurisdictional allocation factor had dropped from the currently authorized 41.018% factor to 39.209%. Over concerns with regard to the level of 2015 earnings and potential future earnings levels, Otter Tail and staff have agreed to make a refinement to the renewable rider, adjusting the ROE from 10.75% to 10.5%, and also adjusting the jurisdictional E2 factor to the 2015 39.209% amount. Incorporating these changes effective May 1, 2016, would reduce Otter Tail's annual revenue requirement by about $442,000. In summary, Otter Tail respectfully requests approval of staff's recommendation to implement the rate as computed in Otter Tail's February 26th supplemental filing, along with the agreed upon adjustments to the allocation factor and ROE level in the renewable rider. While the rate is increasing in this update due in part to the timing of Otter Tail's ability to utilize tax benefits associated with these facilities, North Dakota ratepayers will see a collective reduction in the revenue requirements across the three riders as a result of Otter Tail's ability to utilize bonus depreciation in 2015. Lastly, I want to thank staff, in particular Mr. Diller, for his thorough review and analysis of this filing and the pre-filed testimony he has submitted in this case. In his testimony, he provided a clear explanation of how tax benefits are incorporated into rates, which is admittedly a very complex subject to describe. Mr. Diller also recognized that Otter Tail's wind farms are some of the best-performing facilities in the country, providing low-cost, reliable energy to Otter Tail's customers. Otter Tail has also been successful in its other capital investment projects, such as the Big Stone AQCS project, where Otter Tail brought the project online at a cost reduction of over $100 million. These cost-effective projects and Otter Tail's history of prudency has resulted in low rates for its customers. We appreciate Mr. Diller's recognition of these efforts in his testimony. This concludes my opening statement.
Thank you. Further questions, Mr. Gerhardsen?
I have a couple follow-up questions. Mr. Tomerdahl, I heard on two table references what might have been incorrect page numbers, and I just want to clarify in the record if I heard that correctly. So I think you had referred to Table 9, and I just want to clarify, Table 9 is on page 18 of your testimony. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Table 8 is on?
Table 8 is on page 15. My apologies.
There were a lot of numbers. Those were the two that I heard that might have been incorrectly stated, what page number they were on. I also, while it wasn't... sort of to emphasize a bit of the bottom line of your summary, I thought it might be worthwhile just looking at Table 11 for a moment on page 21 of your testimony. And can I have you just describe briefly what really the main point of Table 11 is?
Table 11 was prepared to try to reflect... the impact of what bonus depreciation is having across all three of Otter Tail's riders, the renewable rider, the environmental rider, and the transmission rider. And so what we did is we took a look at, from a calendar year perspective, 2015 and 2016. Because the riders are placed into service at different points in time, we thought that by looking at just the revenue requirements from a calendar year perspective, we could put each of these riders on a level playing field and quantify the impact of what is happening with the ability for Otter Tail to take advantage of bonus depreciation. And so what you see here in summary is the first set of columns related to 2015, a revenue requirement of approximately $22.8 million across the riders without bonus depreciation. You see in the next column with bonus depreciation that in 2015 the increase, it actually increases to about $23.3 million and so the change is about $430,000. Now, this might be a little counterintuitive, and so we have to kind of take a look at what's happening in each of the riders. And we'll start with the renewable rider. You see that increase happening in the renewable rider for 2015 and of about $662,000. And that's a result of the delay in Otter Tail's ability to utilize production tax credits for 2015. You will see a similar effect carrying over into 2016. Now, the counter to that and where we're going to see the benefit is in the environmental cost recovery rider. As I explained in my opening statement and in testimony, our AQCS project at Big Stone was placed into service at the end of 2015. So you're going to see a small reduction as a result of our ability to take bonus depreciation in 2015. You may ask, why is it smaller? That is because the facility went into service at the end of the year, and so you can't take an entire year of the depreciation. Where you see the more significant benefit is in the reduction in revenue requirement as you get a full year of the impact reflected in 2016. We also had some transmission projects placed into service in 2015, seeing a similar impact to the revenue requirements there as we are able to take additional bonus depreciation on those projects. Partial year for 2015, a more full year in 2016.
Okay, so I want to ask a question. Oh, go ahead. Did you want to?
I guess the point here is that in 2015, while we see an increase of $430,000, in 2016 we're seeing a reduction of about $866,000. The net effect is about $435,000 over the two-year period that ratepayers are going to see a reduction in revenue requirements across these three riders.
Okay, so I want to just really sort of punch a couple points here to help summarize this. So when we look at the application that was filed in December and then the change that's made by the time of December, the renewable rider rate goes up. Is that, am I correct?
That's correct.
But does this help to show that customer bills, at least by the through the 2 years, 2015, 2016, the revenue requirements actually for customers, the customers will be paying through their bills, so their bills will actually go down because of the bonus depreciation, even with what's occurring with PTCs.
That's correct.
So is it fair to say that the occurrence of bonus depreciation, even as reflected in our February filing, is beneficial to customers?
When you look at the overall bill impacts and the overall revenue requirements that the customers are going to be paying, yes, it is a positive impact. It will reflect a reduction in revenue requirements that would be incorporated in the bills that customers would pay.
There's actually one other point that I think might be worth pointing out. If you could turn to just Table 7. Can you just very briefly describe what is illustrated by Table 7?
What Table 7 represents is the net plant in service balance of the three wind farms that Otter Tail is recovering through the rider. As you can see, the Laverne, the Ashtabula, and the Langdon, and these are stacked bars, so they're showing the total amount of net plant in service. As one would expect over time, as these facilities are depreciating, that portion of rate base, the net plant and service amount, will continue to decline, and that has a reducing effect each year on the overall revenue requirement in the rider.
So the point that I'd like you to help explain is that the phenomenon with respect to the rates is really entirely associated with these tax occurrences, not associated with any increase to investment or changes with depreciation overall?
That's correct. It's, you know, the effect in the bills and the variability that we're seeing in the bills is really, that impact is coming from the timing of when various tax benefits are able to be utilized and how the accounting happens for these benefits as they follow, the riders follow, you know, traditional rate-making principles in the treatment of these items. That's really the, you know, the drivers in what we're seeing in terms of the variability of these rates.
Thank you, Mr. Timerdahl. Your Honor, I think in because this was in the nature of a summary, I think I'll conclude questioning now and maybe you have follow-up if others want to probe into other areas of this.
Yes, that would be fine. Mr. Hsu, any questions?
Yes, thank you.
So in some form, the bonus depreciation is expected to continue through 2019. It'll be decreasing to 30%, correct?
The legislation that was passed in December, there's bonus depreciation that amounts that have been determined for the next like 5 years, beginning with 2015. And so 2016, there will be bonus depreciation, 2017, 18, 19. And it does decline to 30%. In the later years.
Does Ottertail Power, do you anticipate that there will be any large capital additions within this period of time while there's still this extended bonus depreciation?
We are, you know, currently involved in some transmission projects that we would expect to be placed into service during that period of time. Our resource planning folks are evaluating potential resources in terms of generation options, and old decisions have been made as to which path. You know,
I think what I'm trying to get at is I'm trying to really see when you'll be able to use these production tax credits, when they'll, because obviously they're accumulating right now as a deferred tax asset, but extending this down the road 15 years and having the customers continue to pay a return on that, that might be a concern. That it might not be worthwhile to really have that, and that would be a concern to have that in the rate base. I was wondering if you could speak to that at all.
You know, I can speak to, I believe, 2016 in terms of, you know, this will be a year where we'll have a little lighter in terms of capital spend and what's going being placed into service, and we do, you know, we do anticipate that there will be some, you know, utilization of PTCs in 2016, but, you know, that's going to be dictated, you know, again, and as you were, you know, point out, based on when certain investment takes place and you know, the timing of when those things happen.
Is there any, are there any projects such as Big Stone, AQCS, and projects, are there any projects like that coming in?
We don't have anything of that magnitude, you know, in the next couple of years. Again, as I mentioned, our resource planning folks are looking at other, you know, potential resources down the road. Whether that falls within that 5-year window or not, I can't say at this point.
So you anticipate probably in 2016 you'll start to be able to use some of these production tax credits. Do you believe that'll continue going forward, that in some form or another you'll be able to realize them?
We anticipate that we will be able to realize all of these production tax credits at some point, and they do carry over for 20 years.
You're also accumulating the North Dakota income tax credits as well, correct?
That's correct.
And those are being amortized over the 25-year span?
Yes.
Okay. And how far down the road are you able to use those? When do those expire?
My understanding, just from some conversations with our tax folks this morning, that there was some legislation that has extended the utilization of some of those North Dakota ITCs for up to 30 years. And so, you know, we think that those are going to be, you know, that we'll be able to use them at some point as well.
Okay. And that's all the questions I have right now, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lean, did you have some questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah, I had a couple of... One thing I was wondering was taking the bonus depreciation, you had an option to take that or not?
I believe that is, yes. I mean, we have that option, but we don't believe that it's in the best interest to, you know, to not take bonus depreciation when it is available.
Then my other question was, I'm comparing your Table 11 with what was filed in the original testimony, a similar table on page 5, not original testimony, in the supplemental filing.
Yep.
And there was a table on page 5. And
in the supplemental filing, you said?
Yes. And there's a footnote in your testimony that says the reason these are different is that the ECR writer was updated.
That's correct. The table in my pre-filed testimony came from our environmental cost recovery writer that we just submitted at the end of March. When we had put together our supplemental filing in February, we were working off of information we had available at that time when we completed that schedule. And as we incorporated and finalized our, you know, North Dakota environmental rider filing and submitted that at the end of March, it had more current information in it. And so we included in that filing Table 11, which I've got reflected in my pre-file.
Okay, so my question is, there's a big difference there. It showed in the original table on that page 5 that... over 2015 and 2016, the decision to take bonus depreciation cost a net of $188,000 to ratepayers. But now on this new table, the difference shows that the ratepayers gained $430,000. So that's $500,000 difference. So that was all from the ECR update?
Correct.
So then the amount you want to increase your rate by, the new rate would be 7.573% on the rider. And that's based on this table 5 on page 5. So should that rate have been updated to reflect your update on table 11?
I believe the renewable rider lines in those two tables are the same, so that those didn't change. The rate that we're talking about is you know specifically to the renewable rider. That didn't change in table.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Yep, in table 5. So that is consistent in terms of the rider.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I misunderstood as I was reading it. Okay. So, okay, I'm good. No further questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Cock.
Thank you, Your Honor. So did you go to school for this stuff, Stuart?
I did.
Morehead State?
Yes.
Do you see their kids going to get drafted or signed with the New Orleans Saints?
Did not know that.
So not only is Carson Wentz hopefully going to get drafted, do we have another North Dakota kid out of Bismarck High that's playing for the Saints next year? I digress. But anyway, you did go to school for this stuff, right, Stuart?
I did.
Okay, so to Commissioner Fedorchak's point, I mean, I do appreciate the company's work in putting all these numbers together because it paints a picture. But here comes the but, right? But I guess I'm just kind of befuggered about what are we really doing here with Otter Tail and all these riders? So let's see if I can put this together in some cognitive thought. Let's go to table 11 because that seems like a good starting point. Okay. So you're basically making the case here that adding in your renewable rider, the cost of $3 to the average customer, you're going to offset that because of where exactly? Just say it again to me one more time.
In our environmental cost recovery rider.
Got it.
We're going to see a reduction.
Okay, so tell me this. So I come out and say, Joe at the Senex station, you're going to raise your rates $3 a month. Tell me how they're going to see a reduction of $3 a month in their bill. How are they going to get notified of that?
Well, when we filed made our initial filing in our environmental rider, we included a notice in that filing. And in a bill notice has gone out to our customers that's reflecting a reduction in our environmental.
Have they already seen that $3 reduction?
They have not seen the reduction. They have been noticed that there is going to be a rate reduction.
And we've not yet ruled in that case yet.
Correct. That's an open case. Our proposed implementation date is July 1 for the ECR.
So what if how can we say that when we haven't even ruled in those cases? I'm just trying to walk this through because we're making the case that we're going to increase your costs here, but they're going to be lowered here because of the way the taxes play out. I mean, is that the right way to do business? I mean, I know this is the hand you're dealt because of the way the riders are laid out, but it seems to me, in my mind, that when we set up the renewable rider, it was to capture the cost associated around wind development, that they could ebb and flow every year, and we would be able to fully explain what it is going on there. But now when we start cross-mingling, what's the point of even having these riders? Why don't we just merge them if we're going to cross-mingle for company benefits? And I'm not saying that's wrong, but it seems to me the scope of what was set up, in my mind anyway, of what a renewable rider is, we're doing this perhaps because it makes sense, but it defeats the purpose of having a rider. How would you respond to that?
You know, certainly the riders are on different annual cycles, and so we see impacts to the customers' bills happening at different points in time. You know, traditionally our environmental rider, we file at the end of December. It goes in April.
But wasn't the point of these riders that to track the costs of that particular business line? And that's why we did it that way, so we could explain it. But when we start doing things like this, aren't we going down the road of what's the point of having riders when really you're just figuring out what's best for the company, which is probably the right thing to do? Why have all these riders to be filed and even confuse people more?
You know, I think, you know, first of all, within the your point about, you know, keeping the effects and the impacts within the rider, we'll use the renewable rider as you know, the example. You know, the timing of the tax benefits applicable to the benefits that are being realized within the rider, production tax credits, investment tax credits, those things, all those items, the bonus depreciation that we were able to take on the Ashtabula and the Laverne wind projects, that is all contained within the rider. And those benefits are being, realized by customers, over time within the rider. in particular, the production tax credits.
When you say over time, if you're going to say over time that they will see this through the renewable rider, how will they ever see that in the future in the renewable rider? You get a rate this year of $3, and next year it'll be less. I mean, that goes back to my schizophrenic policy discussion.
You know, one of the big benefits that customers are currently seeing in the renewable rider is that the production tax credits that are actually generated each year,
they see those right away.
It's the timing of when, you know, Otter Tail is able to actually use those benefits that's creating the accounting situation.
So why don't we just get rid of the renewable rider and the environmental rider and call them one and let you guys do your magic and keep the numbers straight, but then we true these up every year? Because these tax implications I don't think are going to go away. I mean, you're probably always going to be finagling what's the best way, and it's not going to truly have what it was envisioned in 2009 anyway, of you've got a renewable rider that costs X amount of dollars. Eventually it'll go down to just, I mean, you're always going to be doing what's best for the company. It looks like the way it'll be laying out is you're going to have to juggle back and forth between business lines to figure out what's best, and it won't be reflecting what was the intent of the rider, in my mind anyway. I mean, would you agree with that, or do you think that I'm going down the wrong road here?
You know, it's something that we haven't done a deep dive into in terms of
what would be the problem of merging these riders.
At this point,
both cases are in front of us right now.
You know, an option would be, you know, one thought is considering at least when the rate is placed into effect,
sure,
at least syncing up the recovery periods for these riders.
Which that makes sense.
We haven't thought through, I guess, or really worked through what merging them into one rider would do. I think we would see a collective effect similar to what we're showing on table 11.
At the end of the day, that's what we're trying to – I mean, I think that – I'm going to beat the dead horse, the renewable rider. Let's jump to the environmental rider. What are the costs outside of all the big stone stuff that are involved in that environmental rider? Is there any other?
That's
pretty much it, right?
That's pretty much, yeah, the investment in that. We have a small piece investment of our Hoot Lake plant. We put some equipment on there, but it's primarily that capital investment for the big stone project.
So let's get on a different road then, because I remember when we set up the environmental rider, which I think I remember, the thought process there was there's a lot of cost around big stone. Let's track these fully as we go through the ebbs and flows of policy changes at the federal level. But maybe we go a different way. Should that environmental rider, I don't want to get into trying that case. I guess I need to be careful. Is that something that should get rolled into rates down the road instead of merging it with the renewable rider? What did you think that down the road where the plan was there?
At some point in our next general rate case, that would likely be the proposal that we would roll that into base rates.
So maybe we go the other way. If we're going to have as much interplay with the renewable rider as other, that's what I'm looking for here, mechanisms to collect your rates, maybe we should scrap these riders altogether and just have one rate case, make these all go away, and let you guys do what you do with tax policies and production tax credits, and when you don't have enough revenue, you come back in for a rate case. Is that something that might be an option too?
You know, one of the things, just to offer some perspective, you know, it has been, since 2009, I believe, was last rate case that we had.
And it was a good one too, wasn't it?
When you look at the significant amount of capital investment that Otter Tail has made since that point in time, these rider mechanisms have, you know, really allowed us to continue to make these investments, to bring new transmission online, to to allow us to meet our, you know, environmental obligations while avoiding the cost of burdening our ratepayers with the cost of rate cases. And so, you know, it's been a good mechanism.
But haven't we continued to see tick-ups of all these riders every year? So the rate impacts have trickled up, which to paid for investment, but the customers have seen rate increases without the benefit of a full rate case to have their chance to say their piece, which is maybe one of the reasons we're having this today, is that the customers had chances to come in and say their business.
I think in Mr. Diller's testimony, he shared some interesting charts in there that show that, yes, we have seen, you know, our rates increasing as a result of the riders.
Result of investment.
And a result of investment and getting the recovery through these riders. You know, we're still keeping our late rates you know, lower. We're lower than, you know, the other IOUs serving in, you know, in North Dakota. And, you know, we have been able to avoid, you know, a rate case that, you know, Otter Tail serves 58,000 customers in North Dakota. And when you start doing the math on the cost of a rate case and what kind of an impact does that have on a customer...
That's assuming that whenever you apply these riders at their layups that we don't have full-blown hearings. If we end up having enough hearings on all these riders, it would be the same. That cumulative effect for hearings on riders could be more than a rate case.
I don't know the answer.
Okay, I think I'm kind of going around in circles here again. The transmission rider, you talked about some certainty saying that these are the costs, and I guess I would challenge you that I don't think there's a certainty in the transmission riders. We're in front of FERC right now on a significant case that is a lot of dollars, and so if that goes the way that we don't want it, there's going to be a huge plus up there.
I'm glad, Commissioner, that you brought up the transmission rider, because there is one clarifying point that I want to make. You know, that table reflects the impact that bonus depreciation would have on the projects in the rider and would exclude things like the MISO Schedule 26 expenses and those types of things that are also included in the rider. And so this is kind of taking a look at those projects and saying, okay, those that qualified for bonus that went into service, what was the impact, as opposed to not taking bonus? You know, we still have other projects that are under construction in the transmission rider. We'll be making another rider filing in by September 1. And I don't want the table to suggest that the...
You're painting a picture here that the costs are going down that I don't think is accurate.
They are going down with regard to the incremental impact that bonus depreciation has in that rider on those projects. And I wanted to make sure that it was clear that we weren't suggesting that when we make our filing in, you know, in September, end of August or September 1, that the transmission rider rate and the revenue requirement is actually going to be less. What you're going to see is less of an increase in the rate. So that's
right.
That's the clarifying.
Okay, fair enough. There was just a couple of questions I had written down notes. Talk about this federal grant of $30 million I pulled out of the testimony somewhere. I just wanted to get a little more info about that. I'd never seen that before, didn't fully understand it. I mean, I understand it, but where does that come from? I'm trying to find what page it was on. Yeah, here we go, page 5. Elected to take a $30 million federal grant. Just curious how that came, and I don't recall seeing that anywhere before.
When the Laverne wind farm, when Otter Tail was in the process of developing that wind farm, and this would have been the third wind farm in 3 years, so we've been coming off of some significant capital spend. This was also at the time we were just, you know, the financial crisis that was taking, you know, were on the back end of that a little bit, and credit markets were tight, and liquidity was a little tighter for Otter Tail at that time. The decision was to take the grant, to take the cash to facilitate the remaining financing that we needed to get that project done, to take advantage. That particular project did qualify for bonus depreciation back then.
What was this grant, though? I've lived these
cases.
It
was a federal.
It was just free money? You just asked for it and they give it to you?
Well, we submitted.
And there must be strings attached to it.
It was part of that American Recovery.
Okay.
Forget the name of the act, but it was part of that.
Stimulus dollars that came out? Okay.
And that grant was, that $30 million was... basically reduced the cost of the project, so the net plant and service balance was reduced by that.
But we've long since seen the benefits of that laid itself out.
They've realized that benefit in a reduced revenue requirement over time.
Okay, let's look here. Sale of wrecks. How much did you make in the sale of wrecks? We're talking about that right now. And how did you apply those dollars in the different jurisdictions? You talked about sales of wrecks helped offset it, too. We've been having a lot of discussion about wrecks, and different states have different ideas. And I'm just curious what kind of dollars that turned out to be.
In page 16, I commented, I think the proceeds of the wreck sales that happened at in that true-up period, we had that large negative true-up, was about $240,000.
Rec sale. So that was for just North Dakota, or that was all jurisdictions?
I'd subject to check. I believe that was just North Dakota.
Okay. I'm just trying to flesh that out because we're having ongoing discussion about recs and. I think we had your guys in here a while ago telling us what to do about wrecks, and Minnesota has different viewpoints than maybe South Dakota does, so I guess an implication with what we do with wrecks will affect your renewable rider costs? We can draw those parallels or connect those dots?
Yeah, I mean, when the rider, whenever we sell wrecks, those proceeds of the sale are being passed back through...
I guess I'd forgotten about that or maybe never remembered it. But so just to connect those points, if we decide to not let you sell wrecks, then it'll be an increase of $240,000 potentially. Well, depending on what's available. Yeah. But it'll be some difference. Okay. I think when you talk about the bonus tax depreciation, that's amongst all jurisdictions. Everything works itself out, right? Okay, but when we have the North Dakota tax credits, do you apply those just to North Dakota ratepayers, or do you apply those across the board? I know what I think the answer should be.
Yeah. again, subject to review, but I believe those are being passed through North Dakota.
How do we verify that? Because I don't know if you've taken any or not.
I have staff here, people.
But I don't know what we got a former legislator here that could probably talk through it. But I would think the intent of a North Dakota tax program would make sure it stays with North Dakota customers. And then how are you – are there any of those tax benefits in these costs, or is that all going forward?
The North Dakota tax credits that we were able to take – it was 3% a year first 5 years. The commission had decided that those benefits would be normalized over the life of the facilities, and so they're being spread equally. So there's a credit coming through each.
But you can verify or have somebody verify that for sure. You know you've done that to the North Dakota people in this stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. There was one more note I had underlined. Oh, that was it right there on page 12. You talked about the commission ruled ITC should be amortized. Do you remember when that was? Was that early on discussion? Because I underlined that, and I don't remember that we did that, but I remembered that it came up.
Maybe in the 2010 time frame.
Okay, so there's something we said that you okay. All right, I think that's subject to maybe some follow-up after the next witnesses or after they present their case on what to do with these riders. That's probably it. Thank you, Stuart.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good morning. Thanks, Stuart, for that. Your initial testimony, your pre-filed stuff, and for the discussion with Commissioner Kalk. Your pre-filed testimony was really very clear, I thought, and so I want to give you personally some credit for that, and your staff, whoever helped you put it together. It was very helpful in trying to understand some of these different accounting terms and the procedures that you use, and it is pretty complex, and my understanding, although I've gone through it a couple times, is a little bit fragile. So I'm going to I have some follow-up questions just to try to understand a little more thoroughly, and it might get uglier before it gets prettier. It's kind of like cleaning your house. So first of all, since you were talking about the riders with Commissioner Kalk, and I think I appreciate his interest in trying to make this simpler for the customers to understand, because we do hear that a lot. You know, they see costs going up over time, and then they hear people talking about how wind is so cheap, and they don't buy it because they see their bills going up. And so where does the affordability come in if they're hearing that wind is so affordable? They just I think people are just not understanding that, and I can't always explain it that effectively either, except for I'm assuming that it would be more expensive because the wind is displacing higher cost generation, so the rates would be going up more if it weren't for the wind. Is that a correct explanation? Just in, you know, we're talking simple terms. Yeah. In the grocery store.
You know, on a customer's bill each month, there's an energy adjustment, you know, factor in terms of what is our cost of energy to serve the customers. The wind generation basically has a zero cost effect in, you know, our energy rider. And so they are seeing a reduced cost of energy every month. Mm-hmm. As you pointed out, it's displacing higher cost generation that we would have to, yep, you know, pay the fuel for or
but offset purchase by other investments like transmission and whatever.
Correct.
You know, and environmental riders or costs like the Big Stone Project and things like that. Okay, so in terms of the riders, just in general, they intentionally fluctuate because they are designed to reflect actual costs. Is that why? I mean, is there any way to get away from that fluctuation?
You know, one of the key aspects of a rider is that we always true up to actuals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of what happened, and the effect on the current rate that's in effect. You know, it's quite low. We had that $1.8 million true up built into this current rate. And so when we have information that, actual information that comes in and it replaces our forecast information, and then the revenue requirement is recalculated and reset so that the customer in the end is only paying the actual costs,
mm-hmm,
that are rolled through the rider.
So if we were to look at pull up one of the charts here. Just like on page 14, table 7. That reflects the actual cost of the plants, the wind generation facilities, and it's decreasing.
That's correct.
But so if that was the only thing being tracked in this rider, it would always go down. If you're just recovering that column.
That's correct.
But that is, what else offsets that? I mean, you've gone through some of that, so you might have to repeat some of it again, but leaving the bonus depreciation stuff off the table, just talking about what offsets this in the renewal rider calculation.
Okay. What this chart reflects would be our gross plant in service, what we spent to put the project into service. And so roughly these three projects cost about $300 million. You take out the grant that we received, and so that reduced the one project. And then as we depreciate these assets, the net plant in service then that's still remaining mm-hmm. is a component of the rate base within the rider upon which the return is calculated.
Right. Okay.
And so you're going to see, if you just look at the facilities and as they depreciate over the life, mm-hmm. their useful life, you will see an incremental decrease each year to the revenue requirement from that particular component of the rate base.
Okay, so what are the other components of the rate base?
Okay.
You can go through those.
Yep. Because of things like bonus tax depreciation, what happens is, you take a lot higher tax deduction on your return as you, record on your books. Mm-hmm. And so that difference, while we calculate the tax expense within the rider using a normalized, you apply the tax rate, a portion of that income tax expense is paid in the current period. Another part of it is deferred mm-hmm. because you're not paying, you're not sending the cash on to pay those taxes. That balance that's not paid, and this is typical, rate making mechanics. That balance that's not paid, we refer to that as accumulated, or it's booked as commutative ADIT, accumulated deferred income taxes. Because we're getting the money from customers for the taxes, but we're not paying the IRS or, the taxing authorities that money, we'll be paying it at some point in the future. This ADIT amount is then recorded as another component of rate base, but it's a reduction. Mm-hmm. And so we have
the amount reduced off of the cost of this plant stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So if you have a net plant and service balance of, we'll say, $200 million, mm-hmm. but we have accumulated deferred income taxes of, I'll pick another number, 30 or 40 million, your net rate base,
have any of those for this. You don't have bonus depreciation for the renewable rider in this time around.
Not, there were no new
right.
investments
so that's
placed
happening
into service.
On the transmission and the energy rider.
Correct.
Okay. So we don't have that reduction in this one, but you do have the PTCs. Is that the same thing?
The production, they're not the same. Okay. These wind farms, the first two wind farms, the Langdon and the Ashtabula wind farms, we elected to take production tax credits on mm-hmm. those. And so for every megawatt hour that's generated each year, we earn a tax credit. Mm-hmm. In the rider, we have our tax expense that's calculated, but we also flow through the value of these production tax credits that are generated each year, dollar for dollar, in the revenue requirement calculation. So there's a credit or a reduction dollar for dollar. And on page, it was in my testimony, I quantified the impact. On page 11, actually, if you've heard of the table on page 10, table 6, and these are total company values, but over the, from 2011 to 2015, these were the production tax credits that were generated and earned for each of those years for these two facilities.
So, can you show me? Was there any table that showed how that reduced the cost? Where is that? Where is that table?
Actually, Mr. Diller has a real good table in his testimony that kind of shows the aggregate effect of the accumulated depreciation and the production tax credits and the offsetting nature of those things.
Where I get confused with this particular area is if you look at your table 11, you got January to. You've got the 2015 and 2016 year.
Correct.
You say that the production tax credit comes off. But when you look at 2015 and 2016 and your description that you can't use the production tax credits those years because you don't have a tax bill, it looks to me like they're added back in. I mean, that's how I see that without bonus depreciation, and then with the bonus depreciation, can't use the tax credits, so they're added back in. Is that what's happening? It obviously isn't, but what is that? Why? Why is it? Page 21.
Page 21, correct. It might be helpful, and maybe if I can take you back to table 9.
Okay.
On page 18. And before I even start talking about that, I want to make sure that as we talked about, and I talk about these production tax credits that are generated each year, and when I say that they're passed on to the customers as a credit or reduction in the revenue requirement that we calculate, that happens on a dollar-for-dollar basis. So I was getting...
That already happens before you, for the very first revenue requirement. It already reflects that.
It's each year, and on page 11 in my testimony, I quantified that in 2015, approximately $2.9 million. So the revenue requirement we've calculated, if you looked at 2015, the revenue requirement would be reduced by about $2.9 million of direct pass-through of production tax credits
to
the customers.
To give a tangible example, if you look at 21, table 11, that first number for 2015 with bonus depreciation, $7.6 million, that reflects the production tax credit already being taken off.
Right. The expense credit
for
production tax credits would not be any different in those two scenarios.
Okay. So it's already reflected in there.
Right.
Okay.
The change is a result of the Otter Tail's ability to actually utilize those tax credits on the tax return. So we're giving the credit to the customer. They're getting the full benefit dollar for dollar.
Okay.
In the rider. Okay. As a reduction to the expense, the tax expense portion of the rider. The portion that we are unable to use on our tax return in the current period becomes an asset or an addition to rate base until such time that we can use that credit on a future return, and that's what table.
So that's what you're paying earnings on.
And exactly.
And the earnings are what's those earnings are what drives that. I'm still looking at table 11. drives up without bonus depreciation and with bonus depreciation. So
that would,
there's like $600,000 there.
Right.
They earned six. You earned $600,000 on that. On that two whatever tax credit
to
amount,
help,
$7 million.
Yeah. To help put it in a little bit more perspective, if I refer you back to Table 9 on page 18. This kind, we talk about production tax credits that we haven't been able to use on the tax return. And Table 9, I included that to try to help illustrate, you know, why did we see such a big swing between our initial filing and then the subsequent supplemental filing. So at the end of 2014, you'll see we had a PTC tax asset balance, which was part of rate base, of about $18.9 million. So this was, we've passed tax credits each year through to our customers. That reduces the revenue requirement. There's a portion that we haven't been able to utilize yet on the tax returns, and so that'll happen at some future point. And so at the end of 2014, that was approximately $18.9 million. And these are company number, you know, company-wide mm-hmm. numbers. When we made our initial filing in this case, and it was before we had rolled in or incorporated the impact of the bonus depreciation into that filing, we were anticipating that Otter Tail would be able to utilize these tax credits in our 2015 mm-hmm. as well as our 2016 tax years. And so that's why we had in our initial filing, we had projected looking out, you know, those green bars reflect what we anticipated to be the balance right. in rate base from the initial filing. Bonus depreciation, the effects of that get incorporated because of the you know, the fact in the NOL position we're unable to use these tax credits. Instead of seeing that significant reduction in the balance of this component of rate base, we're actually seeing it increase. And so that's the delta that's attributing to why is the renewable rider rate going up. It's because of, you know, the effect of an increase in this portion of the rate base attributable to the production tax credits.
And how do you calculate the earnings that customers have to pay on that? Is it your
It would be our rate, yeah, overall, the rate of return, just as it's applied to any other component of rate base.
So, okay. So they're basically paying interest because...
Yes. There, it's a carrying charge until those benefits are being used. That would be a fair way to characterize it.
So if you have those invested someplace in a bank account, you make interest twice off the customers and then off the bank. If you're collecting those in an interest-paying account.
Well, we have passed through all of this value to our customers
right.
already.
Some of it. They're still paying interest on it.
They're paying interest on this portion, but they right. have... If you were to look at the compare the reduction in the revenue requirement from the, you know, the 2.9 million that mm-hmm. customers receive as a direct credit
yep.
in the, you know, in a calendar year, as opposed to the interest they pay on whatever portion
right.
we haven't, you know, the net effect is definitely a benefit to the customers.
But that is, so just from a straightforward, there's nothing else in the difference between these two columns on Table 11, the without bonus depreciation, $7.6 million on the renewable rider, and the 8.2. The difference between those is the earnings on that production tax credit or this whole accumulated deferred tax account. Right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. You see a lot of pink slips here, but we've covered a lot of them already.
Pink slips.
Right.
Okay, so also, what year are we... help me explain the time period we're talking about here, because the reference to 2015 and 2016 in these two schedules on Table 11 has me confused as to what is actually the time period we're calculating.
The rate is calculated, and the rate that was proposed in the supplemental filing, you know, was calculated based on an April through March of 2017 time frame, but assumed an implementation of May 1.
Okay, so we're truing up from where, though? From what point last?
Our true up, I believe it's, I think we probably have actuals in through the end of the year of at the end of 2015 with the supplemental.
From which months, though, starting when to when? The true up, and then the new rate goes into effect, and so that's what I want to know. Like, what are the months?
Okay, the true up would actually in the rider would come to anything in the true up bucket. The true up bucket would be up through March of 2016, the end of March.
Okay,
that would include at least our current estimates or forecasts. Information. We actually have actuals in our supplemental filing through the end of 2015.
Okay. So
and then
March,
so then there's, yep.
And the last true up covered what period?
The true
last
up
year of March 2015.
Right. Maybe if you turn to Table 8 on page 15, that will help. If you look at column B on table 8, that would have been the revenue requirement from last year where we had that large $1.8 million negative true up.
Yeah.
And so we had over-collected as we incorporated, the utilization of PTCs that we were able to apply back in 2013. We had, the current rate we had in effect then with the cold winter, we had increased collections. Mm-hmm. We had those rec sales. Those things were all incorporated. And then the carrying charge, you know, as we talk about, you know, applying, you know, the return on those carrying that, you know, if we over collect, we incorporate a carrying charge and the customers get paid
back.
That. Interest and in cost back. So,
okay. So that was so. It's to March 2016.
Yep.
All right. And so this rate goes into effect and won't be in effect until next year. And then we'll Then we'll true it up. All right. Next year, 2017, March of 2017.
That would be the end of the recovery period.
Yep.
That this current, the proposed rate, the 7.573% is.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I think my last question then relates to the changes that you negotiated with staff regarding the return ROE and the E2. Okay, so I have no idea what this E2 factor is. What can you tell me about that? What is the 2015 E2 factor? Is that the percent of that you're allocating to North Dakota?
Correct.
Okay, what is E2?
You know, Otter Tail has 16 different allocation factors that are used to allocate costs. The E2 factor is you think about as basically our energy factor. In other words, what you know, the amount of energy that we and sales across all of our system, entire system across all three jurisdictions. We take the retail sales that we have each year. Depending on the level of service that a customer is taking, we compute a loss factor, and that whole effort is really trying to get to a number that represents what was generated at the plant to serve the load. So in other words, if we sell 100 kilowatt hours, we may have to generate 109. Okay, and so that allocation factor is based on back at the generating source, and so it's an energy, so it's an allocation of our sales energy across all.
So you assume that North Dakota is using 39.2% of your generation or your energy. Or
the allocation in 2015 showed that on that particular factor, 39% would have been in North Dakota. The balance would have been in
what
Minnesota.
What you're using for, how does this reflect the rates, and why aren't we seeing, why after Mike said, yes, I agree with this calculation, et cetera, and you're dropping the revenue requirement by $442,000, why isn't the rate going down, the agreed upon rate for this collection period?
You know, at this point, we haven't incorporated it into the current rate. I guess if the...
When would it be incorporated?
It would be incorporated into the true-up in the next...
Oh, okay. So that's agreed on for the future, for the next time around.
We would, yes.
Okay. The other thing that that you and Ms. Commissioner Kalk talked about was, you know, in the lines of simplification, the one thing you suggested that I think makes some sense is looking at syncing the timing so that when the riders come on board, there's sort of a net increase or decrease for customers, and that would be reflected so that you don't get the heart rates up on customers because they're seeing a 3-cent increase. And then, you know, Mike and others who get the phone calls, you guys don't have to say, yeah, but, you know, in a couple months it'll be going down, and in the end you're going to pay less. Mm-hmm. It would be nicer if you could say, well, look at the increase, but look at the total, you know, the total picture, and it's a decrease. Because I do think that, you know, explaining this with all the tax implications is virtually impossible, and they won't believe us, any of us. So it'll just decrease our credibility. So I think that makes some sense. I don't know what's involved in the complication, you know, of changing those that timing and the scheduling of it, if it means, you know, some sort of a deferred implementation or whatnot of this rider, but I do think we should, you know, considering the differences and the size of some of these changes, I think that merits some close consideration. So, all right, I think that's it for now, Stuart. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm on table 6 on page 10. The production tax credits roughly stand around the $7 million a year mark, and that's really for two wind farms because Laverne doesn't get any, correct?
Correct.
Okay, but then when I jump back to, now I lost what page, oh, page 9, that production tax credit is going up to $24, so actually this should increase a little bit, correct?
That's correct.
And did I read somewhere else that's scheduled to go up to $26 at some point? Or because I don't see anything in here. I don't know where I got that.
I'm
but
not,
it was in my head.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that.
But the 24 is coming.
Correct.
For this year. And somewhere in here it says that you get those for 10 years. Did you mean that you have 10 years left or 10 years from when they started?
The production tax credits, we began earning them when the plant went into service. And so for the first 10 years of the life, oops, I'm sorry.
Did you spill?
Oh, yeah.
It's just water.
Yeah. Brian.
I'm sorry.
He'll evaporate eventually.
Yeah. I must be getting to him.
Put my water bottle down.
Okay. So the production tax credits, we started earning those, you know, when the plants went into service. So Langdon went into service in December of 2007, and the Ashtabula plant went into service in November of 2008.
So the collection of these ends pretty quickly here in the
Correct.
Next couple years.
Yep.
But you have 20 years from when they were earned to use them.
On the tax returns.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Can they be sold?
I don't know. I suppose they... I don't know for sure. We haven't explored that. I don't know. It's a good question.
I always thought they could be, and so that's something I'm going to be seeking an answer to, what the potential is to sell them. But we'll get back to that then. So you've had about an hour and a half to summarize the written testimony. I figure when I run into one of your customers that's not happy, I'll have about 20 to 30 seconds. So let me just try this out, and you tell me if I'm explaining this inaccurately, okay?
Okay.
Because of this, the bonus depreciation and the big project at Big Stone and some other transmission lines, you got a great big income tax reduction this year. And so you couldn't use these production tax credits this year. And so you put it off. But this rider is explicitly for this purpose, and so since you're not using them, it makes us go up for now, but ultimately it will be less in the long run because you saved some because of the other income tax implications, plus you saved these for later.
Correct. Yep.
That's pretty accurate. Okay. Then I want to explore more the use of the bonus depreciation and kind of pick up where Jerry asked actually my first question. The bonus depreciation is not a requirement, correct? That's just an option that you could use.
I believe that's correct. I could confirm that with my tax person here, but
okay.
I believe that is correct.
Then, and maybe we'll need to ultimately do that if you're not sure of the next answer, but I always back and forth with my own tax preparer that I know that's the technical name, but I always say that she shouldn't call it bonus depreciation. She should call it early depreciation because I don't think you're getting any more depreciation by using it than you would otherwise. You're just getting it sooner.
That's correct. You're accelerating the depreciation for tax purposes much
right.
sooner.
So by accelerating it, you're lowering your tax burden now, but you're increasing your tax burden sometime in the future when you don't have that expense available to you that you otherwise would have had. So why are you... could it be argued that it's short-sighted to take so much of your bonus depreciation now to keep your taxes low now? When how long, I am assuming these would be 10 or 20 or 30 year depreciation schedules on the kinds of investments we're talking about.
From a book perspective, yes, 25 years.
So I am wondering if it's a little bit short-sighted that we increase our tax liability in those later years all in order to benefit quickly now.
you know, the treatment is typical with let me step back. When we take the accelerated depreciation and bonus, and you know, it's a good example in the environmental rider. We're reducing the rate base significantly upon which rates are going to be calculated and what ratepayers are going to pay because of how the deferred income tax effect is incorporated into the calculation. You're correct in that over time, you know, you're seeing a lower amount paid initially, and in later years, you would see an increase. But that's, you know, rate making mechanics take that into account and make sure that as you know rates are developed and as customers are getting a benefit from that.
I would argue that the investors are getting the benefit quickly, but that the customers long term are not going to be. But I can see that it's certainly a benefit to the investors at this point.
Well, and there is a benefit to the customers in terms of a reduction in the rate base. If we can pay if those taxes can be deferred to a future time period, the traditional rate making mechanisms and mechanics take that into account and provide that timing difference, that the benefit of that timing difference through a reduced revenue, you know, rate base and revenue requirement amount.
So why wouldn't it be the same argument? Why haven't you explored selling the production tax credits and lowering your rate base now further?
I guess we haven't explored that.
It seems like it's the same kind of an end result. You're benefiting the rate base now at the expense of the rate base later, and you're choosing to do one and not choosing to do the other. And so I'm struggling with the inconsistency of it. I don't know which is the right strategy. I will tell you, I don't know very many. Oh, let me ask you a question first. Did you use all of the bonus depreciation that was available, or did you reach the end of your tax liability, or at least as far down as you wanted to go, and so there's some that you could have taken had you had more tax liability, but that you chose to put into your depreciation schedule?
My understanding is, you know, we took all that was available from a bonus.
So you still had tax liability.
As I stated in my testimony, you know, because of the magnitude of the amount of bonus that we were able to take, driven in part a big part by the AQCS project, our environmental project, that bonus depreciation, more than offset any. It created an NOL position or a net operating loss position from a tax perspective for 2015.
Well, I guess the bottom line for me is that I just struggle with the inconsistency of using the bonus depreciation but not selling production tax credits. It seems like they would go hand in hand. So at some point I need some kind of clarification on that, why one would do one and not the other. No other questions.
Commissioner Koch, is there something that you'd like to offer?
Well, I have more questions, but I don't know if you want to go around or how you want to do it. I got some stuff I'd like to do, if that's okay, Your Honor.
Sure. Would it be all right if we ask for any redirect from Mr. Gerhardsen before we proceed?
Absolutely. I don't know if you want to take a break, if the chair wants to. Whatever you guys want. But I'd have probably another 15 minutes more questions that just came up.
Are there follow-ups to his?
There are follow-ups to his, but also some things that I've neglected the first time. You know, I've got the additional information John got for me that I needed to collect after the first line of questions.
Is there anybody that would like a break?
I would.
Okay, very good. Is five minutes good?
Sure, that'll work.
Okay, let's go off the record. 5-minute break.